Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It is Thursday, July 2nd, 2026, and this is the AI edition.
Today, we are examining the structural shift from static software to the new agentic economy, where autonomous workflows are replacing traditional human-in-the-loop interfaces. We are moving from an era of tools that require instruction to an era of systems that execute intent.
It is the transition from digital assistants to independent economic actors.
Stepping back, that shift is fundamentally rewriting the value chain of digital labor.
We begin by looking at the first wave of this disruption, the rise of the new agentic economy. Anthropic just released Sonnet 5, and apparently it's less of a chatbot and more of an industrial-scale token printer. Today we are diving into the new agentic economy.
It's a massive shift in architecture. We're moving away from these simple, one-off chat interfaces toward complex, autonomous agentic workflows, where a single decoding task can consume roughly 1,200 times the tokens used in a standard chat interaction.
So instead of asking a question and getting an answer, we're basically hiring a tiny digital assembly line that stays awake all night, churning through enough data to make a Victorian factory look like a boutique.
We can trace that further. The industry is pivoting toward what's being called a token efficiency era. The goal isn't just raw model capability anymore, but specialized, cost-effective inference and agentic software that can autonomously use tools and browsers. Take Sonnet 5, it functions less like a standard chat model and more like an automatic Ralph loop. It uses massive token inflation, generating nearly twice the output of Opus 4.8, to power a system of self-adversarial reviewing and sub-agent spawning.
Token inflation. That sounds like a very expensive way to describe an AI that spends half its time arguing with itself before it actually does anything for me.
It's a deliberate architectural choice. You have this tiered hierarchy now. You might use Fable 5 as a high-level, superintelligent advisor for complex planning, but then you hand the actual execution to Sonnet 5, which acts as the fast and efficient implementer. It's optimized for cost per task efficiency rather than just raw reasoning power.
But there is a massive bill coming for this efficiency.
There is. We're seeing the end of the AI subsidy era. The shift toward token-based pricing for things like Amazon's cloud usage means infrastructure partners are moving away from wholesale computing hour rates toward much more granular, usage-dependent economic models. It's getting much more expensive to run these loops at scale.
I mean, when Sonnet 5 is run at max settings, it can see a 40% increase in output tokens and a tripling of the agentic turns required for even simple knowledge tasks. It's like hiring a consultant who insists on writing a 10-page memo for every single email they send.
And the economic implications for the broader web are structural. As these agents become the primary visitors to the internet, doing the research and making the decisions, brands are facing a crisis regarding the purpose of their websites. If the agent reads the data and moves on, the traditional web audience disappears.
It's turning the internet into a ghost town of automated bots, where the only thing left for humans to do is wander through the wreckage.
It's actually worse than that. We're seeing the rise of a recursive bullshit loop. Agent-generated traffic like automated email replies creates more noise, which necessitates even more agents to filter that noise, creating a massive amount of non-human-driven slop that exhausts global CPU and memory resources.
So we're building a digital ecosystem that is increasingly designed to ignore humans entirely.
It's even moving into the corporate structure. The AI Daily Brief noted that we're seeing the emergence of organization-centric agents like Claudetac. This shifts AI integration away from individual user productivity and toward persistent, tool-equipped entities that live inside ecosystems like Microsoft Teams. The agent becomes a permanent fixture of the company, not just a tool in an employee's pocket.
Which sounds great, until you realize the agent might have a better seat at the meeting than the actual humans.
That's the gradual disempowerment risk. It's not about a rogue AI making a sudden hostile move. It's about a series of small, rational decisions to delegate tasks to AI that eventually creates a self-sustaining agency that no longer requires human welfare to function.
Let's talk about the developers, though. If we're handing the keys to these coding agents, aren't we just creating a massive pile of understanding debt?
That is a significant risk. As the pace of AI-generated changes outstrips manual review capabilities, developers lose the ability to maintain mental models of their own codebase. We're seeing a shift toward requirements-based engineering, where humans have to move from vibe coding to formally writing and testing specific, numbered requirements to provide a verifiable framework for the agents.
So the job description for a software engineer is moving from writing code to writing very strict instructions so the AI doesn't accidentally delete the database.
Two things stand out. You have to transition from manual prompting to architecting agentic loops. You aren't managing a tool anymore. You are an objective setter evaluating the outputs of a digital teammate. This is also why benchmarking is changing. We can't use simple tests anymore because of reward hacking. New benchmarks like Frontier Code use out-of-sample heavily rubric-based tasks to ensure code is actually mertible by humans, not just syntactically correct.
I'm also worried about the security side of this agentic playground. If these agents can browse the web and use tools, they're basically walking around with a set of master keys.
The vulnerability is real. AI in Business pointed out that the BioShocking jailbreak reveals a fundamental flaw in AI browsers. By merging the control plane, the decision-making, with the data plane, the web reading, prompt injections can bypass safety guardrails by forcing the model into a fictitious context. Even worse, these agents currently lack same-origin policy protections. A single conversational request could potentially allow an attacker to access siloed, sensitive credentials or repositories across different platforms.
So when bad prompt and your agent starts exploring your private emails because it thinks it's playing a role-playing game.
The pattern is clear. There's a secondary risk in the training loop itself. The AI Daily Brief discussed the distillation trap, where companies like Meta try to replace expensive external models with internal ones like MetaCode, but they risk contaminating their new training data with the outputs of their rivals. This could lead to both legal exposure and a measurable degradation in model intelligence.
It's like trying to make a fresh batch of sourdough using old fermented starter that was actually just someone else's discarded dough.
That's a surprisingly accurate way to describe it. And the complexity is scaling. We're seeing the rise of specialized architectures, like Anthropic's Claude Science, which uses multi-agent architectures to enable parallel subassistants for tasks like sequence analysis while maintaining research reproducibility. The future architecture won't be a frontier model by default, but a complex routing layer where small, low-latency models act as classifiers to direct tasks to the most cost-effective model.
It's becoming a massive, automated, self-referential machine.
It is.
But the real divide will be between transformative and non-transformative organizations. Those that use AI for productive bot sitting, treating it as a reasoning partner and teacher, will pull ahead of those that simply use it to automate existing tasks. The latter will get trapped in a known ROI bias, prioritizing efficiency over the opportunity AI that actually creates new capabilities.
Software engineers need to start auditing their understanding debt before their entire codebase becomes a black box.
Watch the emergence of large-scale, multi-agent slop in enterprise communications. If automated email and Slack replies start outstripping human traffic, the infrastructure strain will be the first sign the system is spinning out of our control.
But as these digital teams become more autonomous, we have to wonder about the borders they'll respect.
Maya, I was looking at the recent patterns in model access, and it feels like we've officially moved past the era of anyone with an API key can play. We are entering the era of model sovereignty, where the very weight of a neural network is becoming a tool of statecraft.
Model sovereignty. That sounds like a fancy way of saying the borders are back, but instead of fences, we're using parameters and context windows.
It's actually much more concrete than that. We're seeing a massive fragmentation of the AI landscape. Look at the US government's recent decision regarding the Mythos model. They didn't just regulate it, they effectively turned it into a gated community. They've restricted access to a vetted group of roughly 100 agencies and corporations, creating what is essentially a de facto licensing regime.
So instead of the wild west of frontier models, we have a VIP lounge where the Department of Commerce decides who gets to sit at the table.
Worth noting, according to the AI Daily Brief, this creates a gatekeeping mechanism where access is granted via customer-by-customer government approval. It's not about a fixed set of rules anymore, it's about administrative discretion. You see this reflected in the industry too. Palantir, for instance, is pivoting toward NVIDIA's Nemotron open models for US government use. They're doing this to eliminate what AI in Business calls the unblockable person-in-the-middle bottleneck. If you use a proprietary model like Anthropic's, the provider holds the kill switch. By moving to open models, they are securing the supply chain by ensuring the model weights and the data authorization stay within a closed sovereign loop.
Wait, you're telling me that being open is actually the more secure way to run a government? That feels like a complete reversal of how we thought about the cloud.
It's the only way to avoid external network dependencies. And this isn't just a US phenomenon. We are seeing a massive push for sovereign AI globally. In Europe, you have France pledging 100 billion euros to AI infrastructure, coupled with SoftBank's 75 billion euro data center investment. The goal is to create geographically isolated, nationalized AI ecosystems. They want to ensure that when a crisis hits, their intelligence doesn't evaporate because a server in Virginia went offline or a subscription was revoked.
It's like every country is building its own digital bunker. But if everyone is building bunkers, doesn't that just make the whole global system more expensive and less efficient?
It does, but it's a response to a very real threat of intelligence asymmetry. There is a massive risk that the US maintains exclusive access to N+1 generation models, the absolute cutting edge, while everyone else is relegated to older, more transparent tiers.
But there's a catch.
If the U.S. implements heavy regulation and delayed releases to ensure security, it creates a prisoner's dilemma. If we restrict our own frontier models, we might inadvertently accelerate Chinese dominance. If they maintain unrestricted access to the frontier, the resulting intelligence gap could shift the entire global economic advantage to them.
And I assume China isn't just sitting around waiting for us to finish our regulatory paperwork.
Not at all. They are essentially employing a Huawei strategy for AI. They are leveraging the low-cost or even free distribution of models to drive the global south toward a self-contained, US-incompatible technology stack. We're seeing the economic pressure manifest in real time. The AI Daily Brief reported that Coinbase has already reduced its AI expenditure by 50% by defaulting to Chinese open-weight models like GLM 5.2 and Kimi 2.7. The cost efficiency of the Chinese stack is simply too hard for a CFO to ignore.
So the US tries to block the hardware, but the software just bypasses it.
That is exactly what is happening through a process called model distillation. AI in Business recently highlighted an allegation from Anthropic involving a massive distillation attack by Alibaba. They used 25,000 fraudulent accounts to generate nearly 29 million queries. The goal is to use the high-quality outputs of US frontier models to train much cheaper, high-performing open-source models. This could effectively render the entire US-China chip war obsolete. You can block the H100s from reaching Beijing, but if they can distill the intelligence of GPT-5.6 into a model trained on domestic hardware, the hardware blockade fails.
So to recap, the US is building digital walls, China is building digital bypasses, and corporations are just looking for the cheapest way to run a chatbot. We've turned the most transformative technology in human history into a high-stakes game of digital border patrol. It's almost impressive how much we've managed to complicate the simple act of computing.
It's getting more complex. Even the supply chain is shifting. Look at the massive $3 billion deal between CXMT and Tencent. It signals a structural shift where Chinese hyperscalers are pivoting away from American memory suppliers to domestic manufacturers to navigate these very export controls. The US is successfully forcing a pivot, but that pivot is creating a completely new parallel ecosystem.
And even the frontier itself is starting to look less like a single peak and more like a fragmented mountain range.
We are moving away from a landscape dominated by a few Chinese players toward a long tail of diverse, niche, and sovereign organizations. The gap between US labs and open-weight developers has actually stalled at a 3 to 6 month margin for over 18 months now. The US dominance isn't accelerating away from the community like it used to.
It sounds like the era of the global AI is ending, replaced by a collection of highly guarded local digital fortresses.
There is a real danger, though, of what some experts call compute inversion. In the cognitive revolution, analysts warned that US labs might eventually bypass European markets entirely. They might be willing to sacrifice regional revenue in Europe if it means securing the massive compute gains required for recursive self-improvement. It's a brutal calculation: win the intelligence race even if you lose the market.
Investors in European infrastructure need to realize that being a sovereign player might mean being a secondary player in the actual race for intelligence.
The real test will be whether the next major model release, something like GPT-6, is treated as a global public utility or a weaponized state secret.
Regulators in the EU will need to watch for any sign that US developers are prioritizing raw compute scaling over regional market stability.
Speaking of losing control over what we consume, does the rise of these highly curated, nationalized models mean we're about to lose the ability to discover anything truly unexpected?
It makes you wonder if we're moving toward a world where even our personal tastes are just a byproduct of whatever algorithm your government decided was safe to show you. We are currently caught between two massive, colliding forces: the desire for total digital convenience and the fear of losing our very sense of taste. Alex, if we're heading toward a world where every piece of art or music is perfectly tuned to our specific brain chemistry, are we entering a golden age of personalization, or just a slow slide into cultural stagnation?
It's a shift from algorithmic recommendation to what Kyle Chayka and Sophie Hagney call wish fulfillment. Traditional algorithms like the old Spotify or Netflix models predicted what you might like based on existing patterns, but generative AI moves the needle toward hyperspecification. It creates the content to match your immediate impulse, which effectively eliminates the possibility of being surprised or challenged by something outside your comfort zone.
Instead of a stranger introducing us to a great new band, we just have a mirror that reflects our own existing cliches back at us. It sounds less like a discovery engine and more like a digital Narcissus.
That mirror effect is exactly the danger. Nadia Spiegelman demonstrated this with an experiment where a Claude account actually altered its definition of beauty based on the user's profile history. When the AI modulates its aesthetic responses to match your data, it creates a closed-loop ecosystem where the distinction between consumption and production vanishes.
And I assume there's a way to turn this wish fulfillment into a very efficient way to flood the market with junk.
Something to flag here, we're seeing the first real tremors of that. AI in Business reported that Tidal is now demonetizing AI-generated music to combat upload farms, where creators use low-cost generative tools, potentially costing under $1 per song, to flood platforms and skim royalty revenue. It's a massive volume play that threatens to drown out human artists.
It's the high-end slot problem. If I can generate a perfect image of a luxury living room by just prompting a bot, why would anyone bother with a photographer?
But the economic incentive is already shifting. AI in Business noted a specific arbitrage happening in real estate. People are buying used furniture and using generative fill to virtually stage them in premium settings, which can increase lead generation by up to 400%. We're seeing a move toward visual intelligence where the utility isn't just creativity, but the ability to manipulate reality, like using ChatGPT to remove a trash can from a rental listing.
So the art is just a layer of digital makeup for a profit margin. But doesn't this slop eventually break the medium? I mean, if every pixel is just a statistical prediction, does the whole thing just dissolve into nothingness?
That's the exhaustion multiplier effect. The AI Daily Brief suggests that as we spend more time managing these AI errors and feeding context to these models, the physiological cost rises, with workers reporting higher burnout. And Hard Fork argues this creates a parasitic loop. Trillion-dollar companies use human labor to train models that then destroy the very economic incentives required for humans to produce new foundational work.
It's a tsunami of pollution in our collective taste. If we lose the friction of the unknown, we lose the ability to develop an actual identity.
Which is why some are turning to collector strategies, intentional offline randomness to build a sense of self that isn't just a reflection of a prompt.
Creative directors at major agencies are going to have to pivot toward much more visceral, non-representational styles to stay ahead of the replicable perfect aesthetic. Keep an eye on whether the next major art movement is defined by human emotion or just by a more sophisticated way to bypass a copyright filter. But all of this sophisticated software still needs something to run on, and that brings us to the massive physical struggle over silicon and power. We are currently witnessing a massive wealth transfer from AI service providers to memory chip manufacturers, and the name on everyone's lips is Micron. It sounds like a way to describe a very specific type of hardware-induced famine.
Ramageddon is the term being used, Maya. We're seeing massive price spikes as Micron chases 84% gross margins, a trend that is already forcing giants like Apple and Microsoft to raise consumer prices just to cover the cost of the silicon.
The AI revolution is actually just a very expensive way to make my next iPhone more unaffordable. But this isn't just about memory, is it? There is a genuine scramble for the physical atoms of computing.
The bottleneck is shifting from model architecture to the physical limits of the chip. We're seeing a massive move toward vertical integration, like OpenAI's development of their Jalapeno ASIC in collaboration with Broadcom, which aims to compress the design cycle for custom silicon to just 9 months.
So instead of buying off-the-shelf GPUs, the labs are building their own bespoke kitchens.
So here's the picture. It's not just about the chips themselves, but how we use them. As Noam Brown from OpenAI has noted, we are moving from scaling model size to scaling inference budget. Models' capability is no longer a static score. It is a fluid variable that depends entirely on how much compute you are willing to spend on a single task.
Wait, you're telling me that a model's intelligence is essentially just a credit card limit? If I give it more tokens and more time, it gets smarter.
In a sense, yes. This creates a massive structural constraint.
If a model needs to run for weeks of test time compute to solve a complex problem, you hit a physical bottleneck in time that makes an overnight intelligence explosion structurally impossible. You can't bypass the physics of how long a calculation must run.
Which sounds like a very expensive way to stay stuck in place. And then there's the energy problem. We are building Manhattan-sized data centers in places like Ohio, but the power grid can't keep up.
That's the demand-side risk. Hyperdimensional has pointed out that if U.S. policy continues to restrict model releases, the massive $100 billion investment in nuclear, natural gas, and battery infrastructure could become economically unviable. If there's no use case for the massive power output, the whole reindustrialization play collapses.
So we're building the world's largest power plants to run models that we might not be allowed to actually use. It's a beautifully circular way to go broke.
But there might be a way out through hardware algorithm co-design. Machine Learning Street Talk highlighted a paradigm called thermodynamic computing. Instead of fighting the inherent noise and heat in a chip, researchers like Thomas Ahl are proposing we use that noise as a computational resource to solve complex stochastic equations.
Instead of building a better air conditioner for the server, we just teach the AI to enjoy the heat.
It's more about using the randomness of the hardware itself to perform complex probabilistic math more efficiently than any traditional deterministic processor ever could. It turns a defect into an asset.
Software developers should probably start learning how to code for a fever. Investors in the energy sector need to watch the regulatory approvals for large-scale nuclear tie-ins to these new data centers. Keep an eye on whether the next generation of bespoke silicon actually hits the market by 2027, or if we just end up with even more expensive, very hot, very large paperweights. But if we can actually harness that physical chaos, does it mean the next breakthrough in AI will come from biology rather than just bigger databases? I was reading about a new type of mathematical landscaping this morning, and it sounds less like science and more like a very intense game of Minecraft.
It's actually the frontier of scientific intelligence. We're moving past LLMs that just predict the next word into phase where AI is actively redesigning physical reality, from the molecules in our medicine to the aerodynamics of a car.
We're just handing the keys of the universe over to the GPUs now.
Not quite, but the mechanism is changing. In drug discovery, the bottleneck has always been predicting exactly how a protein and a drug molecule fit together in 3D space. Latent Space reported that researchers are moving away from simple pattern matching toward inference time scaling, essentially forcing models to think by iteratively refining these structures in memory.
And I assume thinking involves more than just guessing.
You can't just have a good enough guess. If a model is off by even 0.6 angstroms, a functional hydrogen bond becomes a useless collision. You need sub-angstrom precision to ensure the chemistry actually works.
One tiny digital hiccup and your life-saving drug is actually just expensive water.
The data tells a story. It's a massive optimization headache because, as Latent Space noted, drug discovery is often a whack-a-mole problem. If you optimize a molecule to bind better to protein, you often accidentally make it impossible for the body to absorb.
It sounds like a lot of moving parts. Is engineering any more stable?
Even more intense. Neural Concepts' Thomas von Tschammer describes a third revolution where we've gone from manual prototyping to AI-driven models that can evaluate thousands of designs a day. We're seeing move 37 moments in engineering, where AI suggests counterintuitive, mathematically superior designs that no human would ever think to draw.
I suppose it's easier to be a genius when you can run 10,000 simulations overnight.
It turns engineers into grand strategists. They aren't doing the manual iterations anymore, they're directing the agents.
Biotech investors should probably start looking for teams that treat molecular biology as a specialized form of representation learning rather than just biology. Keep an eye on the first major drug to emerge from a lab-in-the-loop reinforcement learning system. That's when the cycle truly closes. As we close out this July 2nd edition, the thread connecting everything we've discussed today, from the rise of Anthropic's latest reasoning models to the massive infrastructure pledges in France, is the dissolution of the human interface. We are witnessing a transition from a world where we use tools to a world where we manage autonomous workflows. The software is no longer waiting for our instructions, it is beginning to execute its own objectives.
And that shift fundamentally alters the strategic calculus for every major sovereign power. For leaders like President Trump or President Xi, the goal is no longer just about controlling data, but about securing model sovereignty. We are seeing the emergence of digital fortresses where the primary competition isn't just about who has the best algorithm, but who can insulate their domestic ecosystem from the external intelligence asymmetry of a rival's compute-heavy agentic workforce. If you don't own the underlying infrastructure, the specialized ASICs from companies like OpenAI or the memory breakthroughs at Micron, you aren't just behind on technology. You are functionally invisible in the new economy.
It's a high-stakes game of building closed-loop systems that might eventually function perfectly well without us. The danger isn't just the economic cost of these Manhattan-sized data centers, but the cultural cost of an internet populated by agents optimized for our immediate satisfaction rather than genuine discovery. We risk trading the richness of human friction for a seamless, automated, but ultimately hollow experience.
The tension is between efficiency and agency. To see if this theory of fragmented, automated ecosystems holds, keep a very close eye on the next round of U.S. Department of Commerce updates regarding export controls on advanced memory and compute. If we see a sudden pivot toward even more localized, hardware-restricted trade blocks, it will confirm that the globalized internet is officially fracturing into a collection of competing, automated fiefdoms.
Thanks for joining us for this weekly digest. We'll see you next week.